Some things in life just aren't what you expect. Okay. Actually, I don't really probably need a microphone, but it's going to get me. Okay. The first thing about this chapter... Oh, I'm Susie. I'm an addict. Can everybody hear me? Can you hear me now? Well, I just hold it like I'm a performer. Okay. There it is. The best part about this whole chapter is the very first word. We all love it. More. More. We get more of everything when we come in here. We get more feelings. We get more problems. We get more pain. We get more joy. We get more friends. We get more income sometimes. Then we get more alco. So it all kind of balances out, and that's what it's really all about. I was going through this earlier today. I mean, I've been through it before, but I was doing it again. Because I really like studying the text. My home group is a text study meeting. And Glenn, here's my GSR. I love having a servant. Anyway. When I read, I went on a vacation. You know, in this chapter, it talks about so many things, you know. It talks about where we're going. It's more, in my feeling, it's about like our journey as it is right now. You know, it's like the mile markers between from where we just were to where we're going to go. It's not like, you know, when I have 20 years clean, you know, I'll have a big house and a car and, you know, I'll have all this. Well, you know, it's more, for me, it's more about, well, I have... today, and this is what I'm dealing with today, you know. Plus, the bad thing about learning how to deal with shit is as soon as I learn how to deal with it and get good at dealing with it, everything changes. So once I'm, like, really good at, like, I don't know, doing my dishes or my laundry, where's Steve? If I learn how to do my laundry, then all of a sudden my dishes are backed up, you know. If I learn how to pay my bills and I get good credit, then I get a car. But guess what? I got to put more gas in it because it takes more gas. You know, it's like, oh, I got nice stuff. But this is how I maintain it today, you know. So in going through here, I decided that I went on this vacation with my mom. You know, it talks about if we had expectations, you know, of what it would be like. That's where it talks about that in here. Well, I'll tell you what. I would never have expected to go on a cruise in the Caribbean with my mother and my sister. Staying in a room as big as this, and we are all my size and bigger. I mean, when we all get in bed, the ship leaned over. And I was on a bunk. So I knew if the bunk collapsed, it was going to land on my sister, and I'd definitely be guilty of one more thing in the family. But it's like these things. But you know what? When I did that trip, it was something that I really wanted to do. And I love my mom, and I love my sister. And we get along. Our relationships are so much better now. And that's because I live in today now. You know, I don't go moping around because of the things I used to do. I make amends to people by behaving in a different way. And, well, the one thing that happened on this trip, which was so cool, I went snorkeling. I want that to be my hobby. Yeah. First, when I got to this place, I was by myself because they're not snorkeling material. And, you know, the Mexican people would babysit them, so... I went off by myself, you know, with the group. And of course, I hooked up with this drunk guy named Mike and hung out with him all day. But as far as the snorkeling goes, went to this lagoon in Mexico, and it was like paradise. It was so beautiful. You couldn't even wear suntan lotion there because they didn't want the environment to get messed up. It's so gorgeous. I mean, it was like Gilligan's Island is like trash, you know, compared to this place. And so I went there, and it was $9. Get the snorkeling gear. Well, you know, I'm pretty cheap. Because I have to be. And I was like, well, I'm just going to enjoy it for what it is with what I have. You know, I had like 20. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to enjoy it, you know, and just relax and get in the water and go swim around. And, you know, the drunk guy's gone, but I kind of missed him. You know, he was snorkeling. And then, so then I get in the water and this is just beautiful. And I just, and it was so much to enjoy what I saw without me putting any effort into it. It was just gorgeous. And so I was like, oh, maybe I'll go get in the water and swim because people look like they're having a good time. So I get in the water, and I'm swimming around. It's, oh, it just feels so good, and water feels good. And but I'm looking around, and there's, like, some people swimming, but most people are, like, under the water. These little things sticking up everywhere. And so I was like, okay, screw it. I'm here. I have 20 bucks. I could spend 9. You know, I came to Mexico. I should at least snorkel. And it's a lagoon. So I don't think there's any sharks in there. And so anyway, I went and got the gear. I got in the water, put the snorkeling gear on after I made a fool out of myself trying to walk with those flipper things on down the stairs. And of course, when you're by yourself, you can just act like you're some crazy old fool lady. I kept having this persona, well, if they think I'm weird, they just might think I'm eccentrically rich and have nothing else to do. So, you know, image means nothing to me. And, you know, when I put that gear on, I was seeing all these other people were doing, and I didn't understand. And then I put that gear on, and I looked under the water. Oh, and I also got a life vest, so I didn't have to really swim. I was just, like, lay in the water. And, you know what? More was revealed. Because when I was in that water, and I was really enjoying the water, I was enjoying the temperature. I was enjoying the rock formations that I tried to stand up on, and then made another fool of myself by trying to walk on it, and it left. And just the atmosphere, you know, there's parrots and all kinds of stuff all over the place. And I was just so content to just enjoy it from that view, you know. Then when I took another step and started looking in another direction, I saw a whole nother world, you know. All the fish and the things that were growing under there that weren't gross, you know, it wasn't like trash, wasn't like the lake that we go to for the afternoon. But anyway, you know, I was just amazed, you know, at like the whole nother world that was there, that I was a part of from here down. Well, unless I stepped off a rock and it was from here down. But it was just so powerful to, like, get a glimpse into a world that I already existed in but didn't have, you know, the effort to put $9 into getting the gear to look down and enjoy that part of it. And to me, that's what the chapter More Will Be Revealed is about, you know. It's, you know, putting effort into things. It's giving it, it's just, like, and it, well, one of the things it talks about is complacency in this chapter. And it talks about people with clean time, and complacency is our enemy. And you know, when I come to meetings and I'm so comfortable with my friends, and to be honest, I have a really hard time talking to people that I don't know unless I'm telling them how to do something, then I'm good at it. But I have had a tough time with that, and you know, that's like looking around that lagoon, you know, being complacent, because what I have from just being clean, from not even having any recovery, is good. It's really good. It's so much better than what I had when I was using. But what's available to me from working the steps and actually participating in my recovery is a whole nother world. It's a whole nother dimension. It's a whole nother way of existing. And so when I go to my home group every week, you know, and I get used to talking to the same people all the time, and, well, listening to the same people all the time, and, well, they listen to me every week, right? And so anyway, you know I get complacent with that. And, you know, I have to work on understanding that there's views, and there's other views. You know, if I chose, if I didn't, if it gave me the creeps, if there was stingrays there, I could have hiked a mountain, you know, which I did. Well, I didn't. I can say I did. I did go see Mayan ruins and other things like that. So there wasn't only one option for me, and that's the way it is for me in recovery. There's not only one way to do something, you know. And it talks about the dream, you know, and every time I change in recovery, if something else changes, my dreams change, you know. Like really enjoying 7 nights in a can opener with my brother and my sister, you know. That wasn't a dream, but I loved it. It was so great. There's just so much in here. It talks about getting caught up with old ideas, even with time in the program. You know, my biggest thing with the old ideas, and, you know, I just go to meetings sometimes and I think, man, I have heard this shit before. I am so sick of hearing those readings. And then I see somebody, like, showing off, saying it without looking at the thing, you know. And then, you know, then somebody will say, hey, Susie, what do you think about second tradition? I'm like, what? Which one's that? You know? And, you know, I'm really jealous because these people can remember stuff. And then they, like, rub it in my face by looking at the ceiling while they're reading the reading. And I just... The old idea that I have, that I battle with, is I have to be the best. And in this book, in this chapter, it talks about feeling superior, inferior. And, you know, I think for me to be successful, deep down in my heart, I think I have to meet my own expectations. But you know what? The world that I live in doesn't revolve around what I want, you know? It's involved with direct interaction with other people. So sometimes I have to learn to trust, like, the feedback that I'm getting and the gifts and the love that I'm getting from other people in my life. Yes, I said L, love. And so having that way, it's like a pass card, you know, get out of jail free card. When we're in the program, or for me anyway, because once I used to say something, I stood by it, whether I was right or wrong. Even if I knew I was wrong, that was my opinion. And I form opinions about everything. I form opinions about politics. I don't know politics. I don't know shit about politics, but I'll argue with you, you know. I form opinions about marriage. I've never been married, but I know all about marriage and good relationships. You know, I haven't had a date since 1994. If anybody wants to know how to date, ask me, you know. And I'll tell you, I am the expert. Oh, yeah, and if you want to lose weight, I'll tell you about that, too. So, but learning about these old ideas, and it's like the old momentums, you know. It's just like I can't stop once I get going, being an addict. Once at one thing, it's like one click, one lever is gone, and the whole thing falls down. And then I got to clean up the mess. And sometimes cleaning up the mess is the best thing that I need to do. And then it goes on to talk about, you know, after years in recovery, we find ourselves homeless, jobless, painless. Some of us get real sick. You know, we talked about medication issues in this chapter. And one of the things that it's one of the lines I really like is, we entertained the thought that staying clean was not paying off. You know, and I've been there. You know, I've been there. I'm not homeless, but I could be. You know, I am jobless as far as, like, Social Security paying type of job. And, you know, I've been through illness and recovery. I've been through surgery. And I've been through depression, hospitalization with depression, you know, knowing that the only solution for the people in my life that I love so much was for me to be gone from their life, and feeling good about that decision. Not like I need a hug, I'm depressed, or I lost my cowboy boots, I'm depressed, you know. And I isolated myself, and I did I did everything that I knew to do that I shouldn't do when I was sickest, but I didn't use. And there was one person that stuck by me no matter how bad I treated her or anything, and, you know, she was a big part of saving my life, and I'm really glad that I'm still here. But, you know, but that was one of my biggest things. Because if you give me some reason to whine about something or something's not fair, you know, I'm going to take that and run with it. You know, I'm like, I can't go to meetings anymore because I got X amount of clean time and I feel like shit. I don't feel like living. I don't feel like anything. So I shouldn't even go to meetings anymore because this isn't paying off. I want the payoff. I want a kingdom of recovery. You know, I want people to worship me just because I'm there. You know, I don't want to have to pay my $9 to see what's available. You know, I just want people to co-write my stuff. And that's one of the things I have to be very careful of, because I have a bit of a personality. And I know how to take a principle and put it in front of my personality and shove it up your ass, you know? And we are good at that. Well, you know, unity. Just about unity. That's the first tradition. So anyway, and I work on that kind of stuff. But you know what? The payoff, as I find out, through sticking with something and not using, paying that $9 and looking under the water, you know, the payoff is really cool. It was worth the price that I had to pay to get the benefit. And for me, working the steps and studying the text and talking to people about the text is worth that price because I get that other world. And, you know, it talks about all kinds of stuff. And, you know, towards the wrapping up on this part, it says, you know, we offer hope is what we offer. And I always think, I like acronyms and things that mean stuff to me. And for me, hope is having our personalities evolve. You know, when I feel hopeless, all I need to do is look around. You know, it talks about watching newcomers, that they're a source of hope for us. If I watch somebody I knew when they had 2 weeks clean picking up a 3 or 4 year chip, man, that is a big damn deal. And that gives me hope. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that they stay clean. I have to continue to ask myself, what phase of recovery am I in now? Because that's the only place that I can work from is where I am. You know, I can't say, you know, it's like I can't say that, you know, I can't say that I have, you know, problems with my taxes because I don't pay taxes, you know. I live off the taxes I already paid. But I can't, you know, it's like sometimes I set myself up for all these things that I want to deal with that aren't my part of my reality. I might try to deal with problems that are in your reality and take them on me, but they're not my reality, and I can't move forward unless I know where I am. So that helps me. And the very last line in here, which to me is the very last line in the book, although it's the personal stories next, but this is the last line for me. It says, we have found a way out, and we see it work for others. Each day, more will be revealed. So, hey, everybody, get that snorkeling gear on. See what else is out there. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Michelle and Susie. Our next speaker is Chris W. from Washington, D.C. Hey, Chris.
I'm extremely nervous. This is fairly new to me, and I'm talking about being honest. But all I want and all I ever wanted was to be happy, joyous, and free. And in that chapter, More Be Revealed, it says, indescribable joy comes from sharing from the heart. We no longer need to lie to gain acceptance. You know, so I'm sitting here, and I want to thank the Montgomery County area for thinking enough of my recovery to ask me to do a workshop, you know, and it's this self-centered part of me that wants to take credit for all the work that went into my process to get me here, you know, but I can't. I give credit to the program of Narcotics Anonymous, God of Understanding, and you people. You get credit for everything that's meaningful in my life. I was sitting here and I'm looking around the room and there's a lot of people in here that love me unconditionally, you know, and this program is teaching me how to love them in return, you know. I have a brother here, Eric. I'm sorry, I ain't gonna break your hand, it'd be Eric. A brother who introduced me to this program by getting clean, you know, and when I got here, he provided the hope that I needed. I was desperately needed. He brought me to my first convention here three years ago. And I remember coming here and sitting in workshops like this filled with people. Remember going to the main speakers meeting. Remember being at the dance, at the banquet. You know, I remember being around all these people, but I still felt like the only person there was me. Yeah. You know, and so if you feel that way, whether you knew or been here for a while, just keep coming back, man. Trust me, more will be revealed. I'm a firm believer that God works through people. And so before I begin to share, I'd just like to take a minute if everybody could just like turn to the person next to you and say, did you brush your teeth this morning? The reason I said that was because I was in the hallway earlier and this guy came up to me and he was complimenting me on my t-shirt and he started talking and his breath hit me. And I was like, damn, you know, I know it's no excuse this time in the day for your breath. You know, I understand we had a convention, people be rushing, you know. And I wanted to ask, I'm like, what was your drug of choice, doo-doo or some shit? Like, damn. So it's just a suggestion. Brush your teeth, you know what I'm saying? Slow down, you know, if you're going to be fellowshipping. If it wasn't for humor, I don't think I could survive this process, really, because everything that's being revealed to me isn't good. I'm going to start with the end, because that's when my process started. January 23rd, 1999, I woke up in treatment for the fifth time. I went to Narcotics Anonymous meeting and I went and I used. I had $8. I went and bought a dime. I went to a guy's house and split that three ways. And I told myself, there's no way you're going to get stuck. It's impossible. And I got stuck. You know, 2 days later, I found myself standing in the doorway of my ex-girlfriend's house and I was asking her for $1.10, you know, just because I just wanted to get a beer, something, you know. And she had the $1.10 in one hand and the telephone in the other hand, and she handed me the telephone. I was like, what's that? She said, your mother on the phone. And I told her, I said, tell her I'm not here. I'm not. He said he don't want to talk to you. Your mother said, please get on the phone. I refused. And then she said to me, your mother said she's in the kitchen, and if you don't get on the phone, she's going to pick up a butcher knife and kill herself because she can't take it anymore. And I took the phone and I hung it up. My ex-girlfriend fell on the floor and she started crying. She was like, you don't care about your mother, you don't care about your family, you don't care about me, you don't care about yourself, you don't care about her daughter. And she was right, you know, because I stood over her and I said, look, are you or aren't you going to give me the $1.10? That's where I was at. And, I'm now homeless. I got a fractured knee. It's January. It's raining. It's cold. And 2 days later, I found myself knocking on this guy's door. You know, this is the house where I would go to and use. Three of the times I had left treatment, I had went to this house and used. You know, when I had a job and I got paychecks, I would go there and use. You know, when I was no longer working and I was stealing money from my father, I would go there and use. You know, when I pawned my mother's necklace, I would go there and use. When I started washing youngins' cars, I would go there and use. You know, when I started washing guys' clothes, running to the store, I would go there and use. You know, when I started stealing people's stashes and getting shit on tick and knowing I ain't had no job, I would take it there and use. You know, and so when I opened the door, he had expectations. When I opened the door, he opened the door and the first thing he said to me was, "My man, I could use a good one." You know, but I was on E. I ain't had nothing. The disease of addiction had robbed me from everything, from my ass to my spirit. You know, and I asked him, I said, "Look, can I just sleep in your basement for a night?" And in his basement, he didn't have like a light switch. He had wires that ran through to this one bulb in the middle of the floor. And you turn the bulb on, there's no windows down there. It was real stuffy. It was carpet, it was stained. There's no bathroom down there, so people were urinating empty beer bottles. You know, women would use cups. And they would have them scattered all across the room, so it smelled like urine. It was stuffy. They had this one sofa there that had a spring sticking up in the middle. It was torn. I think I had tore that looking for that one that I had lost. And I asked him, "Can I sleep down there for one night?" And he told me no. You know, and one of the things that was revealed to me in this process was he could have said yes. You know, the next day I called a member of this program who later became my sponsor and another addict that's in Narcotics Anonymous. And what he did was he had me meet him at his job and he fed me. I spent the night there. And the next day my father took me to a treatment center. And when I got to that treatment center, the lady was doing my intake. And on the way there, the compulsion was kicking in again. I wanted to use just one more time. You know, so she did all my paperwork. She said, "You can come in right now." I said, "Bet, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go home and tell my folks I'm coming into this treatment thing." And she said, "Oh, you can call them." Gave me the phone. I said, "Yeah, but they don't know exactly what stuff I need. I need certain..." She said, "You can tell them on the thing." I said, "Yeah, but see my father." And she said, "Look, Chris, if you're here, stay here." You know, and that's the first suggestion I took. And I haven't found it necessary to use, you know, since January 25th, 1999. In More Be Revealed, chapter 10, it says, "If we had written down our list of expectations when we came to the program, we would have been cheating ourselves. Hopeless living problems have become joyously changed. Our disease has been arrested, and now anything is possible." I came in here weighing 135 pounds. I thought I had a six-pack. Somebody said, "If it's on the side, Chris, those are your ribs." Today I weigh 165. I was homeless when I got here. Today I live in a two-bedroom in what I like to think is a real nice area in D.C. I was unemployable when I got here. And I currently have three companies that's trying to hire me at double my current salary. And my dilemma is, which one do I want to take? My father, who no longer let me come on his porch, let alone in the house, 2 weeks ago, I was over there after finishing cutting his toenails. He said, "I'll be back," and he left me in the house all by myself. And the disease said, "I wonder if he still keeps his money in that black coat in the closet." I said, "I don't know, and I'll never know." You know, thanks for sharing. When I came in here, I was telling everybody I was 5'5". I took a physical last Friday and I found out that I'm 5'4". All right, 5'3", 5'3". 5'3". God, my understanding, has to have a sense of humor. I mean, why would he max me out at 5'3"? You know what I mean? And, but those are just blessings that come as a result of not using. What I want to talk about is what has happened to me as a result of not living and what has happened as a result of living the program. You know, I like to just share that stuff, say thanks for letting me share, go to the dance, go home to mom. You know, but it's other stuff. When they called me and asked about the topic, more we revealed, I called my sponsor. I was excited. I called another friend, and he was like, what's your topic? Recovering from down here, making fun of the fact that I'm short. And that kind of... That used to really, really, really bother me. When I was younger, I mean, we would go out for recess and we'd play basketball, you know, and two of my friends would make it and they start picking teams and they'd be like, all right, come on, Kevin. Come on, Mike. Come on, Greg. You know, and I'm like, somebody would want to pick me. You know what I'm saying? That's my ball. Somebody going to pick me. You know? I let you cheat off my homework, you gonna pick me, you know what I'm saying? I gave you my last nine later. Somebody gonna pick me, you know? And it would be me and this girl named Tanya standing here. Come on, Tanya. And I immediately, I took the cowardly way of expressing anger. I build up resentments. That way I can be mad at you and you not know I'm mad at you. You know, and so while other kids was on the playground, guys may do this envisioning that they could fly, wishing they could fly or run real fast like $6 million man. Only power I wanted was to be able to point to somebody's stomach and give them that bubbly-ass diarrhea stomach. I'm sick. You know, while other people want to be Spider-Man, Superman, I wanted to be shitty.
Here and I'm listening to everyone talking about their sons and getting seeing them back and all this kind of stuff, and you know, I left the rooms for a year and a half because I was like, you MFers can't help me, you don't know what I'm going through, and da-da-da-da-da. But the truth was, is I wasn't opening up my eyes. I wasn't taking the cotton out of my mouth and sticking them, you know, out of my ears and sticking them in my mouth, you know, because I was a teenager, you know, and I didn't know what, you know, being revealed was. You know, no one sat there and said to me, you know, more is going to be revealed. Well, what's going to be revealed? What are the answers going to be? You know, and all that, you know, and I was stuck up, you know, and I didn't work on myself. And I'm about to do my fifth step with my sponsor, you know, and let me tell you about what I found out about myself that answered all the questions that I had about myself and realized why I was stuck up. And I was at a point where I could actually open up my eyes and say, you know what, I need to be here at this point in time. And, you know, I'm blessed that I can see my son whenever I want to. You know, more will be revealed. You know, you're sitting and you're having contractions. Before you know it, you got a child in your arms. That's a resilience right there. You know, wow, oh my God, I'm a mother. You know, who'd have ever thought that, you know, 19 years old, the God of my understanding was put a child in my life that I wasn't going to raise, that I was able to give to somebody else and say, look, this is your child, and you are going to take care of them for the rest of your life, you know, and do it for me because I can't do it, you know. And I had a big, huge spiritual awakening with that, you know, and that's one of the whole big things with this convention, you know. And if I had any expectations, we're talking about in there, if I had any expectations of where I would be at when I came in, I wouldn't be here. You know, because when I came in, all I wanted to do, to be honest with you, all I wanted to do was get a boyfriend, get laid, and get out of high school, and go run the streets again. That's all I wanted to do. That's all I knew. You know, and now, I mean, I work with the government, and I have for 2 years, and I have a car payment, and I got car insurance, and I'm like, I don't want any of this shit. You know, but it's life, and it's growth, and it's what's been revealed to me, because my God isn't going to put anything in my life that I can't handle. But I have to keep my eyes open all the time, and I have to watch what's going on, or I'm going to miss what's being revealed to me. And I think that's really important. And I think it's one other thing, and then I'm going to keep my mouth, and then I'll go away. But I think it's really important for the young people in the program. I'm talking about the 15, 16, 17-year-old kids that sometimes we just brush off because they're just teenagers, and they were sent here to get their paper signed. Maybe we need to be the ones that reveal stuff to them, so that they can be the 20, 21, 22-year-olds with time in their hands saying, I'm going to help you when you come back. You know, if you keep coming back, I will help you. Because it's really hard to, you know, When you see someone that's 28, 29 years old that's got, you know, 5 or 6 years, it's hard to relate to them on the same level. You know, it's even hard for me to relate to some people on the same level that are older than me that have less time, or people that are younger than me that have like one day and getting their paper signed. And I just keep coming back because it's going to get better. And I'm going to teach you how to have fun, because that's what had to, you know, people had to do that for me. So don't forget about the little people. And I, when I say little people, I mean the kids. So thanks.
Thank you, everybody, for sharing. We're just about out of time.